two listeners right now on listening to our live stream, and perhaps that will inspire you to go over to WRTFM.org and click on the donation button.
Oh, I have to thank my dear friend Carl.
Hey.
Thank you so much. You rule. I'll get you a coffee or something. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Carl. Thanks to everyone who has donated to this great programming. Just, boy, think of like all the places that you heard music from today. Finland, Serbia, Central Asia, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Guadalupe, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Bosnia, France, Canada, Burkina Faso, Morocco, all of these great, great music from all over the world, brought to you by your friend and mine, Martin Alvarado, here on Global Revolutions.
And you're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison, Wisconsin, listener-sponsored community radio. Stay tuned to a public affair coming right up after the BBC. And thanks again. We really appreciate your generosity. We'll be back next week, just doing what we like to do, is world music without any interruptions, or some small interruptions. See you next week. Thank you. Thank you so much.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. Donald Trump has said the United States will not put up with Volodymyr Zelensky's position on a ceasefire for much longer. The Ukrainian leader said over the weekend that an end to the war with Russia was far off. Reports say Mr. Trump is considering withdrawing aid to Ukraine. The remarks come just days after he had a furious row with Mr. Zelensky in the White House. Sarah Smith reports.
President Trump was responding to reports that Mr. Zelensky had said in London that he believed Ukraine had a strong enough relationship with America to keep aid flowing and that the end of the war was very, very far away. That, said Mr. Trump, was the worst statement he could have made. The U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz said it seemed that President Zelensky was not ready to talk peace right now. For talks to resume, Mr. Waltz said, the Ukrainian leader would need to say he had regret for what happened in the Oval Office on Friday, that he was ready to engage in peace talks, and that he was ready to sign a deal that would give America a significant share in the profits from mining critical minerals in Ukraine.
German police say they currently do not suspect a political motive for an incident in which a car rammed into a crowd in the southwestern city of Mannheim. They say two people were killed and 10 others were injured, five of them seriously. Danny Eberhard has more details.
The car was driven at high speed into people in a pedestrian area of central Mannheim just after noon. The authorities say the suspect is a 40-year-old German man. They're investigating, but have not said whether it was a deliberate attack, nor what any motive might have been. Germany recently saw deadly vehicle attacks in Munich and Magdeburg at a trade union rally and a Christmas market, respectively.
The United Nations Children's Agency says the Israel-Hamas ceasefire in Gaza must hold, as it warned of the devastating consequences of Israel's aid blockade. People in the Palestinian territory say food prices have soared since aid was cut off on Sunday. Hundreds of supply trucks are now stuck in Egypt. Israel suspended aid deliveries after Hamas rejected a plan to extend the first phase of the ceasefire, which ended on Saturday. The Israeli government spokesman David Mensah called on Hamas to hand over all hostages.
Hamas have hoarded for months and months of supplies. They have enough food to fuel an obesity epidemic. But the only people we see getting fat are Hamas themselves. If the criminals of Gaza won't reach out their hand to release our people in peace, then they can stop reaching out their hand to take.
Hamas says Israel must implement the agreed second phase of the ceasefire deal, with the withdrawal of Israeli troops leading to an end to the conflict. World News from the BBC. A group of Ghanaian politicians have reintroduced a bill that imposes some of the toughest restrictions on LGBT rights in Africa. Sponsored by 10 MPs, the legislation proposes strengthening penalties against LGBT people and those advocating for their rights. Gay sex is already punishable by up to 3 years in prison. The bill was passed by Ghana's parliament last year, but the former president, Nana Akufo-Addo, declined to sign it. The launch of Europe's first commercial space shuttle, Ariane 6, has been postponed for a second time. Operator Arianespace said it was due to an anomaly on the ground. The launch was meant to put a French military observation satellite into orbit. Scientists studying the world's most powerful ocean current, which circles Antarctica, have warned it could slow down as melting ice sheets dilute it with fresh water. The Antarctic circumpolar current transfers vast amounts of cold seawater into the Atlantic, Indian and Pacific Oceans, as Richard Howells explains.
The huge cooling current, which goes clockwise around Antarctica, plays a major role in global climate patterns. The chilled Antarctic Ocean acts as a barrier, keeping warm water away from icebound Antarctica. But a team of international researchers using a supercomputer have revealed that if global warming continues over the next 25 years, the current's strength could decline by up to 20%. They warn that such a serious slowdown would have major effects, including more severe climate instability in other parts of the world and a reduction in the Antarctic Ocean's capacity to absorb carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas.
The Scottish artist Jack Vetriano has died at the age of 73. The self-taught painter's work was exhibited around the world. His most famous painting, The Singing Butler, once sold for nearly $1 million. BBC News.
Do you care about workers and labor issues? Do you want to make a difference in our community for working people? Then join the Labor Radio team. Labor Radio is a weekly show that covers labor, social justice, and political issues that impact workers. And we need your help. As a Labor Radio volunteer, you will have the opportunity to report on important labor and social justice stories in your community, interview workers, activists, and experts, produce and edit your own stories. No prior experience is necessary, though a connection with labor is a plus. We will provide training and support. All you need is a passion for worker justice and a desire to amplify the voices of working people. To learn more, contact Volunteer Coordinator Adrian Rainey at 608-321-9583 or head online to wortfm.org/volunteer to fill out an application. Labor Radio, a voice for workers.
6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never.
Welcome to A Public Affair. I'm your Monday host, Douglas Haynes. It's spring pledge drive time here at WORT, and I am grateful to be joined in the studio today by my friend and colleague Stephanie Spehar to talk about how you can support community radio here in southern Wisconsin. Good afternoon, Stephanie.
Hi, Douglas.
Thanks for being here. You have a little good news for us to start off with, right?
I do. So very exciting news. Right at the beginning of the hour, I believe, we had a generous donation from Rose Lapis, who generated to support the show Global Revolutions, which is really cool, I think, because it's one of my favorite shows, too. So yeah. That's very exciting. And we want to thank Rose for her generous donation.
Thank you, Rose. And we're hoping to hear from more donors, of course, this hour. And we have a special matching grant to tell you about. For every donor who donates to this show, A Public Affair Today, WRT will receive double their donation for every new donor, I should say. And for every lapsed donor, if you haven't donated in the past 18 months, WRT receives double your donation as well this hour. And there are two ways to donate. You can give us a call at 608-256-2001 extension 1 to pledge and donate, or you can do that online at WORTFM.org. So, Stephanie, I wanted to chat with you a little bit before we get going here today to talk about one of the things that I really value about this program, and I hope other folks value as well, is we get to have a space here to talk about ecology and environmental justice and the ways what happens, what happens to water and land affect all of us, but particularly marginalized groups of people. And that's something we return to regularly here on WORT and on A Public Affair. Stephanie, you study the interactions of people and land. Tell us about what you think we can do here on A Public Affair and at WORT more broadly to help people understand the importance of those topics.
Yeah, I do. And it's something that's really close to my heart. And that is one of the things I really love about WORT. And I'll say, especially your show, Douglas.
Thank you.
is that you really work hard to make those connections. And I think, you know, for a really long time, people thought about environmental issues and environmental justice as something that's sort of a niche issue separate from other sort of issues related to human well-being. But it's really clear it's not, right? It's about health. It's about economic well-being. It's about social well-being. And I think having spaces where we can make those connections really clear is just absolutely crucial. And I think that WORT is a space where that happens. And you just don't hear that happen all that often in other media outlets. So I really value WORT because I hear it a lot in this space, and that's not something you see everywhere.
Well, thanks for that, Stephanie, and thanks again for being here to show us that you support these kinds of in-depth conversations we have here about environmental justice, ecology, food, animals, and more. Education is something we've been hitting on a lot lately. Please give us a call to donate this hour at 608-256-2001. Extension 1. I was happy to hear from listeners back in January with the show topic of water issues in Wisconsin and beyond, and that topic has become even more urgent since the new Trump administration took office. And on today's show, we'll talk with two experts about current threats to safe water and efforts to address those threats. I'm going to introduce both of my guests here and then remind you all you can call in. But I have with us in the studio today Sarah Walling, who is Water and Agriculture Program Director at the nonprofit Clean Wisconsin. Welcome to Public Affairs, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have with us on the line from Washington, D.C., Eric Olson, who is Senior Strategic Director for Health at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Welcome to a Public Affairs, Eric.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And welcome, listeners. We'd love for you to join the conversation today. You can call in with questions as usual. If you have a question or want to share a perspective on threats to safe water in Wisconsin and beyond, give us a call at 608-467-5627. That's our direct studio line today since we're doing Pledge Drive. That's 608-467-5627. So we're going to get started with our conversation. There's certainly a lot to talk about, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to do this show today, and we're actually doing a similar climate-related show next week to sort of sift through all the news that's coming at us on a daily basis. And with water and climate, some of that news has been, I'm sorry to say, falling below the radar a little bit, not because other things aren't important, but it's just been so much, right, to keep track of. So that's part of what we see as our job here today. And we're going to start with you, Eric Olson, to give us a rundown of the many Trump administration efforts to change or undo safe water regulations at the federal level.
Well, where do I start?
Yeah.
I guess the immediate answer, unfortunately, this is sort of like one of those situations where there's so much stuff going on simultaneously. It's really tempting to just watch the Oscars and try to forget about it and not pay attention to what's happening in Washington. But I'm here to tell you that, you know, I don't think anybody voted for more toxic chemicals in their water or more pollution in their community, but that's really what we're seeing now. So just I'll go through some of the key things that are happening in Washington right now. A lot of it's not even making the news, but both on the drinking water side, there's a what's called the Safe Drinking Water Act that is supposed to regulate the water that comes out of your tap, and then the Clean Water Act, which is supposed to regulate what polluters can discharge into surface waters, and both of those are under attack. So for example, forever toxic chemicals called PFAS, which are a big problem in Wisconsin. These forever chemicals are extremely persistent. They are very dangerous, even at the parts per trillion level. EPA, under the previous administration, issued a standard, the first standards for them in drinking water, for six of them. And that was challenged by the water utility industry and the chemical industry. And the administration, we're interveners in that case, which means we're trying to protect those rules. The EPA and the Justice Department just recently said they want to suspend the case for the next couple of months, and everyone's expecting that they're probably going to ask to take the rules back to EPA and try to weaken them. We think there are legal problems with them trying to do that, but legal problems don't seem to stop them in a lot of other cases. Similarly on lead, as you know, Madison was one of the first cities in the country to replace virtually all of its lead pipes, the lead pipes that connect water mains in the street to people's houses. But it's a massive problem across Wisconsin. It's a huge issue, of course, in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. EPA, under the previous administration last October, issued a rule saying all these pipes have to come out in the next decade. And that also is under attack. So there's legislation that's been introduced to repeal that rule. And there's also a litigation challenging it from the water utility industry. Again, the administration has asked that case be suspended so they can consider whether to take that rule back. So stay tuned on that. Then there's under the funding side, this was a big issue that there was a law called the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law that provided billions and billions of dollars, in fact, over $30 billion to help water suppliers address drinking water contamination problems. That money was frozen, and it was maybe partially unfrozen. We're not sure exactly what the long-term implications are, but with the massive budget cuts that the House and the Senate are considering right now, we're very concerned that that money may evaporate or be frozen or be cut substantially. And then at EPA, I used to work at EPA, I'll just point out, at the beginning of my career. And unfortunately, EPA is really under attack at this point. So the president said he wants to cut 65% of their budget, which would just devastate the agency. There's also talk about, of course, they've already closed the Environmental Justice Office at EPA. And a lot of the other funding and personnel, you know, firings going on all over the agency. I think the agency is in total disarray. You can imagine, you know, if anybody listening, if their boss said, you may be fired tomorrow, you have to write up five reasons you shouldn't be fired, we may fire you anyway, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like almost impossible for people to even work. So those are some of the big ones. The last thing I'll just mention under the Clean Water Act, which is the law, as I said, regulating discharges into surface waters, there's a lot of concern that the agency is likely to roll back how that applies to waters of the United States across the country. There's a real push from industry to roll back some of the provisions of that law, too. So stay tuned on all that. And then, you know, I don't think anybody voted for, or very few people voted to gut our environmental laws or to have more toxic chemicals in their water. But that's where we're definitely headed. And can I make a plug for independent radio and independent media? Because it's really only with independent media keeping an eye on what's happening that people learn about it and we can stop it. Because right now, there's a real threat to our environment and to our health. And if people aren't hearing about it and independent media aren't covering it, I'm really concerned that this will just go forward unchecked. So thank you.
Thank you, Eric, for that really helpful overview. And I'll just add real quickly that if you want to support what we're doing here at WRT, you appreciate this coverage, you can give us a call for our Spring Pledge Drive, 608-256-2001, extension 1, to support our work. We're going to turn to you, Sarah Walling, now to give us a little reaction from Wisconsin perspective. I have lots of specific areas that we can cover, but do you want to just pick up where Eric left off at the Wisconsin level and give us sort of an overview of what you're tracking?
Absolutely. So as Eric mentioned, there's a lot of very big picture protections that we all enjoy underneath the Clean Water Act that are in jeopardy at this point. And so understanding the implications of what that really means to us as Wisconsinites is very important. But pretty much everything that he just laid out will absolutely trickle down to us. We have rules to be able to implement restrictions on things like PFAS, like lead and copper in our drinking water. And by not having the federal laws in place to support our state level action to actually get those things done puts us at a disadvantage for making the kind of progress that we really need to keep ourselves and one another healthy.
So I'm going to follow up with you specifically, Sarah, about PFAS and the Trump administration impacts on PFAS regulations, how that might impact Wisconsin waterways and efforts to regulate and clean up PFAS, which has been in the public conversation here in the state for the last couple of years, especially. How do those state conversations and federal attempts to deregulate intersect right now?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because we are actively at the state level working through some administrative rulemaking, is what the term is called at DNR, to be able to establish standards for PFAS within our drinking water. So everyone in our state who has a private well right now doesn't have any protections on PFAS relative to the concentrations they might find in those wells. So we've been working very proactively at Clean Wisconsin with a lot of other partner groups to be able to establish drinking water standards for our state. Those link to the number, if you will, the water quality standard that the federal law provided. And so our rulemaking would dovetail with that, which is important. Having the same standard as at the federal level is essential. And so if the Trump administration were to roll back and essentially increase what they consider to have a safe level in within your drinking water, that would really impact our ability to restrict and be able to hold polluters accountable within Wisconsin for the PFAS contamination that they created.
Yeah. Eric, I'm going to turn back to you now to sort of bring that down to the both individual and public health level. What are we talking about if these PFAS regulations are eliminated, or we're unable to make more PFAS regulations? What are we talking about in terms of health impacts, both on the individual and public health scale?
Yeah, well, PFAS are very well studied in many ways. So two of the PFAS that are controlled by the EPA rules, PFO and PFOS, are you've heard of them because they used to be used to make Teflon for your frying pans and so on, but they were largely phased out from domestic manufacture because they're extremely dangerous. So even at very low levels, we're talking parts per trillion, parts per quadrillion in your drinking water, they pose a real health threat. And the risks include kidney cancer, we think testicular cancer, they're problems with women's mammary glands developing at a young age. There are issues with immune system problems and just a whole array of other problems, because these chemicals are unusual in that they interact with our hormone system and they can have really profound impacts even at exquisitely low doses. So there aren't a lot of chemicals that are so toxic at such low doses, and that's something that we're really concerned about. So that's why it's so important that these standards go forward, that we not relax these standards. And frankly, only six PFAS are regulated by these new standards, and there are literally thousands of them, hundreds of which are in commercial use. So we really need to adopt national standards and state standards that will control that whole array of chemicals. The good news is that we're making some progress. We had some standards on the books. We had billions of dollars in federal money available to help water systems. There are some in Wisconsin that are already starting to install treatment to address PFAS, but this is a big problem across much of Wisconsin and across the country, and we really need to go forward with these controls.
Thanks, Eric. And I'm going to follow up with Sarah Walling here about those local impacts, and in this case, hyper-local. We're sitting a couple blocks away from Lake Monona, which is fed by one of the most PFAS-impaired waterways in the state, Starkweather Creek. Can you tell us a little bit about like efforts to clean up PFAS in Lake Monona and how those may be impaired by all this anti-regulation activity?
Yes, so you're right. Starkweather Creek is by far the biggest contributor through that mechanism, that vector, to Lake Monona. And so, therefore, Lake Monona and the rest of the chain of lakes downstream from Lake Monona are all significantly impacted by those high levels of PFAS contamination coming in, largely due to firefighting foams that have been historically used within the airport zone. And so the challenge is at this point, those contaminants are already released into the environment, and it's extremely difficult to get them out at this point and extremely costly to do that as well. So the DNR has been working to identify management plans to be able to address that inflow of PFAS into Starkweather Creek and then therefore into the lake chain, and has some great ideas situated, but it's a very complicated situation. You're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of gallons of water passing through a place. So trying to filter that amount of water to really just contain that PFAS is an extreme challenge. and extremely costly. So also to Eric's nod about the funding that we rely on within Wisconsin and across the nation from the federal government to help us as taxpayers to absorb some of those costs to clean up things like Starkweather Creek is extremely important. Those of us who live in and around the Madison area recognize the large degree of fishermen and women that utilize our shorelines and are out there in their ice shanties today, harvesting fish for consumption within their families. And so appreciating and understanding what the PFAS contamination risk is through bioaccumulation in our food supply through fish in this case is also a really important thing to keep in mind and to be looking for if that's a place where you also get some of your sustenance.
Thank you. That is Sarah Walling from Clean Wisconsin here on A Public Affair on WRT 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Douglas Haynes. I'm talking today with Sarah and Eric Olson of the Natural Resources Defense Council about new threats to safe water or ongoing threats to safe water. If you have a question for them or want to share a perspective on threats to safe water, you can give us a call direct line to the studio today, 608-467-5627. That's 608-467-5627. And I'm going to turn now, since it is our spring pledge drive, back to my colleague here, Stephanie Spehar, in the studio to talk a little bit more about what we just heard and why we think that WRT is worth supporting. Stephanie, I think that was a great example of what we were just talking about at the top of the show, how we just heard this national perspective, this local perspective, intersecting to help people understand what is in some cases happening to the water literally outside their back door.
Absolutely. I think one of the awesome things about WRT is how you get that connection between the local and community-based issues and the global context and perspective. And I think WRT does an amazing job of bringing those things together. And also what Eric highlighted about the importance of independent media, particularly at this time, like these issues being covered and discussed in depth as well, right? Not just like a headline here or there, but like an actual discussion with experts about the impacts of these issues. That's something that I find on WRT that I really find very few other places. So I think it really highlights the crucial nature of this community-based radio station.
And this is an opportunity this week and this hour in particular. We love to hear, of course, from listeners who tune in to this hour of A Public Affair that you appreciate what we're doing here to show us that you support what Stephanie just described, what we're trying to do here on A Public Affair. We have a special match today for every new donor who donates to this show. WRT receives double their donation. And for every lapsed donor, that's somebody who hasn't donated in the last 18 months, WORT receives double their donation. Stephanie, can you tell us a little bit more about both how to donate and benefits to donating?
Yes. So if you would like to donate, you can call at 608-256-2001, extension 1. So you can donate over the phone or you can pledge online at WORTFM.org. And that's very easy to do. And there are a lot of cool things you can get depending on your level of donation. And one that I'd like to highlight is the very cool long sleeve t-shirt that you will get at the $100 level. And apparently it's bringing back a design from the 80s that really emphasizes the importance of community. And so I think that's an especially cool gift you can get, but there's lots of other stuff, bumper stickers, bags, hats that you can get at other donation levels too. And actually, I have a couple donors to thank.
Hooray!
I might do that. So
yes.
So right at the top of the hour, Carl donated, and Carl says that he really likes, let's see, what shows does he like? Oh, I'm sorry. He didn't say that he liked shows in particular, but he donated and we are very grateful for that. But then we also had a new donor right at the top of the hour, an anonymous donor who particularly loves Democracy Now! And On the Horizon, but also wanted to donate in the memory of Linda Johnson, a mentor and friend. So thank you so much, both donors, for your generous support.
Thank you, Stephanie, and thank you, donors. Again, the number to donate is 608-256-9001 extension 1. And our very dedicated phone answerer and receptionist Mary Lou is out there to answer the phone, and very friendly as well, along with our receptionist Amy is out there. Thank you both. And we also want to thank our food donors today, Melio's. All right, we are going to return to our conversation with Eric Olson and Sarah Walling about safe water, threats to safe water under the new Trump administration. And we're going to go back to Eric Olson from the National Resources Defense Council in Washington, D.C. And Eric, you mentioned when you did your rundown at the top of the show that lead and efforts to reduce lead poisoning through lead pipes is one of the big issues that is in front of us right now as the Trump administration attempts to deregulate all kinds of water-related areas. Tell us more about the regulatory structure around lead and lead pipes and what is exactly happening now to make it harder to get rid of lead in the water supply. And you could go from there and tell us about the potential impacts of that as well.
Sure. Well, thank you. And in fact, I was in Wisconsin last October when President Biden announced this new rule. So he announced the rule in October at an event in Milwaukee, which has a massive problem, as I mentioned earlier on your show, with lead pipes. And we do know that there are about 9 million of these lead pipes that they're basically a lead straw people are drinking from, because they go from the water main out in the street to people's houses. There are about 9 million homes that rely on these. And they were installed, most of them, 100 years ago or a long time ago. They were banned in the U.S. in 1986. And the reason that there's such a problem is because they do release lead into the tap water. We all know about Flint, Michigan, which had this big problem. But a lot of people thought, oh, that was just a problem in, you know, a few communities, lower income communities like Flint or something. When in fact, we now know that this lead contamination is a problem all over the country. It's a really significant problem there in Wisconsin, because we actually did a survey. We pulled EPA's data. You can go to nrdc.org or just Google NRDC and states with lead pipes, and you'll find a national map, and you'll see Wisconsin lights up as one of the states with the largest number of lead pipes in the country. Illinois has the most. Your neighbor to the south, where I'm from originally, actually. But I will say that these lead pipes are such a problem because what EPA has found, and there was a Harvard School of Public Health study focusing on this, have found is that not only do these lead pipes damage children's brains, especially very young infants and young children as their brains are developing, the lead interferes with brain development. But also what's emerged in the last few years is we now know that lead is linked to cardiovascular disease, to heart disease, and even fatal heart attacks. So EPA concluded when they issued these rules last year that there are thousands of fatal heart attacks that are linked to lead in people's drinking water. So it's not only extremely damaging and irreversibly damaging children's brains, but it's also quite a risk to adults as well.
Thank you, Eric. Sarah, would you like to add anything about Clean Wisconsin's work related to lead and what you see as potential impacts of reversing that Biden administration plan to get rid of all those lead pipes?
Absolutely. You know, to Eric's mention, there are countless, you know, locations across the state that have lead pipes. And the DNR worked very effectively last year to survey all of our municipal water systems across the state. So those are in, you know, big cities like Milwaukee, but very small ones like Reidsville and, you know, other locations in more rural areas around the state. Those municipalities in particular, you know, the cost to replace the lead pipes for them is extreme. You know, you think of a small town that has a handful of people on that municipal water supply, sharing the cost just among the ratepayers within there can have really significant impacts on water bills for those areas. So the funding that was coming through as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law was really there to support all of those communities from Milwaukee to our rural areas in identifying where those lead pipes are, because historically they were put in, you know, decades and decades ago, not always with the best degree of record keeping to understand where they are and what it's going to take to get them out and replaced. So, you know, we've been very hopeful that the infrastructure law funding would continue to support those activities across the state. And so it would be a huge challenge for any state, Wisconsin included, to try to foot the bill for replacing those lead service lines on our own without some support from the federal government. Similarly, you know, to the PFAS rules that I was talking about earlier, we're also in the process in Wisconsin of updating our administrative rules to comply with those very low levels of lead that's allowed as far as the water standard goes. And there's certainly the potential and frankly, likely potential that the Trump administration will pull back on some of those water quality standards for lead as well. Just really, again, hitting right at our public health and safety for our children and for all the reasons that Eric just walked through the health implications of lead contamination.
Sarah, I think we're going to stay with you about another water-related issue now, which is the repeal of the Clean Water Rule, reducing the amount of waterways that get federal protection under the Clean Water Act. We have lots of wetlands here in Wisconsin, lots of small bodies of water as well, and lots of people who enjoy them. What are the impacts of this repeal? And tell us, give us a little more context
Sure.
for it.
Yeah. Yeah, so thank you, Douglas. Yeah, to your point, yes. So the clean water rules that were pulled back as part of a Supreme Court decision called Sackett, what you might have heard of, really took back and pulled back a lot of the federal protections for waterways across the nation. It really pulled back on those protections, especially if you couldn't identify that there was a continuous surface water connection between this water body and another one. So that's where a lot of the linchpin of all of that kind of plays in. The court's decision in many states, therefore, really pulled back on protections for wetlands, for streams that maybe don't flow 100% of the year and those kind of things. Luckily, and this is we have to attribute this to my predecessors in environmental action in this state over the last 50 years and a lot of the founders of Clean Wisconsin, for that matter, who really pushed to make sure that we had very strong and protective state regulations for our waterways. So the way that Wisconsin defines waters of the state is much broader than what that federal ruling would include. So we, even with the implications of that decision at the federal level to pull back on wetland protections, we're pretty well insulated in Wisconsin because our forefathers and mothers put a lot of thought into protecting every single part of the waters of our state, including groundwater, in ways that many other states don't have the ability to continue to protect. So that's not to say that there aren't some ways that our water quality standards for wetlands could be at the crosshairs of any federal action. However, at this point in time, we thank our lucky stars to an extent that a number of our wetlands and waterways continue to have protection under state law, even when they may not under federal protection.
It's really nice to hear a little bit of good news or a bright spot in this onslaught of negative news that we're hearing. But of course, we should be concerned about our neighbors as well. And Eric, we'll turn to you to maybe add a little bit more about the implications of the repeal of the Clean Water Rule for states other than Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, so the Clean Water Rule is absolutely central. It's sort of the basic foundation on which the Clean Water Act is built. As they were saying, basically, as the law works really only to control discharges and harm to surface waters, they're defined as waters of the United States. And because of folks pushing to roll back those requirements, what we're seeing in state after state and nationally is really efforts to reduce the protections of surface waters. As was mentioned, there are a lot of these streams that are intermittent that may only run part of the year. They're wetlands that you may not be able to document actually have direct links to surface waters next to them that wouldn't be protected. So this is just a huge issue. Certainly in Wisconsin, it's going to be obviously great to have state protections, but a lot of states don't have the same levels of protection. And we're unfortunately going to see a situation where we We have a patchwork where if the state actually does have stricter regulation than the federal government, they may have good protections, whereas in a lot of states across the country, they actually have provisions in state law that say they can't be any stricter than the federal rules. And that's going to mean that a lot of wetlands are not going to be protected, a lot of surface waters are not going to be protected in many states across the country.
And is that a done deal now, or is it still in process, or is there litigation going on regarding that repeal of the Clean Water Rule?
Yeah, so there's been litigation ongoing back and forth. It's gone to the Supreme Court a couple of times. There undoubtedly will be more litigation. The Trump administration has made it clear that they want to roll this back as far as they possibly can. That will undoubtedly end up in litigation as well. But I think the bottom line is there's already been a lot of erosion in the protection of surface waters and wetlands, and it's likely to get worse unless something changes in Washington.
Sarah, I'm going to bounce it back to you on that same subject. We have a Supreme Court race coming up in Wisconsin. If you're not comfortable sort of commenting on that, if it's outside of the sort of jurisdiction of your role, that's fine. But I thought I'd check in anyway. Do you see that potentially intersecting with concerns about this Clean Water Rule if the makeup of the Supreme Court were to change at the state level?
Well, I think as Eric's comments throughout the show so far have really highlighted that there is a significant role for the courts in maintaining checks and balances within our, you know, executive branch at this point in time that plays down at the state level. So making sure that we have a fair court system, you know, we're assuming that a lot of these items that Eric, you know, mentioned that we believe to be illegal acts at the federal level are that, but they'll come back. It'll come back to whether or not we have a fair court system that's willing to really take the merits of the case, understand how that plays into the constitutional rights of our citizens and of our states to be able to enact more strict mm-hmm. and stringent environmental protections. That's been a hallmark of the way that the federal state regulatory structure has worked for decades, and something we in Wisconsin really rely on. So ensuring that we have a strong Supreme Court and court system within Wisconsin that will provide those opportunities for a fair and balanced hearing of these issues, it really can't be understated.
Thanks, Sarah. And I want to stick with you for a moment before we turn back to talk a little bit more about our spring pledge drive. I know another big area of concern here in Wisconsin and all over the country really is agricultural nonpoint pollution and efforts to reduce harmful algal blooms, among other things that are caused by that nonpoint pollution. Are there regulations that you're concerned about related to nonpoint pollution right now, either at the state or federal level, or is there something else along those lines you'd like to talk about?
Well, for good or bad, you know, the nonpoint sources of contamination are the hardest to regulate. That's why we have yet to really, you know, solve this issue in any significant way. But there's a lot of activity and a lot of effort going on to at least address these issues at the national and state level. The U.S. Department of Agriculture in particular, it plays a significant role in helping to provide funding and technical assistance to our agricultural landowners to implement practices that do reduce the potential for agricultural nutrients and bacteria losses to our surface and groundwater. Those people and programs have been hit extremely hard. The layoffs, the significant staff reductions that took place across the federal government did not leave USDA and our Natural Resources Conservation Service in particular out of it. And so seeing this approach to the layoffs really have a very crippling effect in that the randomness by which they were being done is like, you know, taking your Lego set out of the box, taking it random, you know, 50% of the pieces away, and then trying to still figure out how you're going to make, you know, that that Lego succulent plant look like it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really challenging to put those puzzle pieces back together in a way that we can continue to support our agricultural producers in applying best management practices to reduce their pollution losses to surface and groundwater systems. So that's, you know, I could talk for a lot further about that one in particular, because Wisconsin in particular has done a fabulous job working with our state's farmers and getting these dollars funneled to Wisconsin to do just that and help make to keep our food system affordable, which is something that I know looking at the price of eggs today might not reflect, but largely speaking, the U.S. is able to enjoy one of the lowest cost food systems in the world and really healthy food. And so being able to provide that while simultaneously protecting our water systems is in great jeopardy because of the certainly the staff cuts, but also the funding cuts that we're seeing left and right that support those kinds of programs.
I think we'll bounce back to you briefly, Eric, to comment from where you're sitting about the USDA and cuts at the USDA and how that impacts water, as Sarah was talking about before we go to a break here.
Yeah, I mean, there are many ways. USDA is a huge institution, and some of the key provisions that are under threat right now include not only programs to try to reduce contamination, as Sarah was talking about, from farming, but also there's something called the Rural Utility Service that provides funding to smaller rural communities to help them clean up their drinking water supplies, to help them with discharges of pollution into surface waters. And that money also, unfortunately, is at real risk. So I think across the board, a lot of the farm programs are under the, I wouldn't say scalpel, more like under a meat axe. Mm-hmm. There's a real threat to basic funding that would help farmers and rural communities address some of their environmental issues. And I think, again, that's not something that anybody voted for, was to eliminate protections in rural America from environmental contamination. But that, unfortunately, is what we're facing right now.
That is Eric Olson, Senior Strategic Director for Health at the Natural Resources Defense Council, here on A Public Affair on WRT 89.9 FM. I'm Douglas Haynes, and I'm talking with Eric today and Sarah Walling of Clean Wisconsin about new threats to safe water. And it is also our spring pledge drive here at WORT. We are reminding you of what we try to contribute to this community. And I think today's show is a great, like I said, example of that. Stephanie, you and I were talking just the other day about how we're learning so much about what the federal government offers us. You know, many of us sort of knew that in the back of our minds, but just hearing Sarah and Eric talk just now has made it really concrete, right? For not just people worried about Lake Monona here in Madison, but farmers and people who live in rural Wisconsin worried about lead pipes, worried about their local waterways becoming contaminated. The threats are happening or are relevant everywhere, really, in the state.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, this theme of the show today, water and protecting water, brings out your point so clearly, because water touches every aspect of our lives and all of us. I mean, we all drink water, right? I mean, it affects economic activities, agriculture, all this stuff. But ultimately, it's something that is crucially important to each of us. And just coming back to the pledge drive, you know, if you, listener, are enjoying hearing this show and hearing this nuanced and in-depth discussion of something that is of crucial local importance, but also national and even global importance, this is a great moment to support local radio and community-based radio.
Yeah, the number to call is 608-256-2001, sorry, extension 1. Got a lot of phone numbers in my head today. That's 608-256-2001, extension 1. You can also donate online at wortfm.org. And for every new donor who donates to the show today, WRT receives double your donation. And for every lapsed donor, if you haven't donated in the past 18 months, you also have the opportunity to double your donation today and help us support what we do here at WRT. And this is our 50th anniversary year. We're very excited about that. You're going to be hearing more about that from me and from many of us here at WRT over the course of the year. We have survived because we have such a strong community base of support, and we will continue surviving because we have such a strong community base of support. So if you value that, especially in this day and age when we need in-depth alternative sources of information to counter suppression of information and speech, by all means, please give us a call, 608-256-2001, extension 1. You got any more news for us, Stephanie?
I was just going to add that if you do donate, and I think, you know, what Douglas pointed out, those are the best reasons to donate, that you want to support community-based radio and independent media at a time that we need it more than ever. But another great reason to donate is you can get some cool stuff. So you can get a really awesome t-shirt, long sleeve t-shirt with a design that celebrates community, that is actually taken from a design from 1980. So it's a little bit of a retro throwback. But you can get that great long sleeve t-shirt at the $100 level. And there's lots of other great gifts you'll get at other levels too. But I think the best gift will be knowing that you are supporting community-based radio and coverage of issues that matter to our community.
We've got just 10 minutes left, so I want to get back to our conversation with Sarah Walling and Eric Olson, but you can give us a call still in that 10 minutes to support a public affair at 608-256-2001, extension 1. Our phone answerer today is Mary Lou. Thank you, Mary Lou. So I'd love to hear in our last segment here what the priorities are both at Clean Wisconsin here on the state level and at the National Resources Defense Council for combating many of the threats to safe water that you both have been sharing with us over the course of this hour. We'll go back to you, Sarah Walling, and tell us a little bit about Clean Wisconsin's initiatives right now.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity. So Clean Wisconsin, we are a statewide environmental organization. We've been around for 55 years this year and have been doing this type of advocacy and education since day one on important issues like this. Water is certainly a current focus area of ours, but we also work on clean air and clean energy efforts as well. And so together, our team, which is just a couple blocks from the studio, works every day to really make sure that these issues come out in social media, through our website, educate listeners just like yours about these issues so that you can help us advocate, because it's really the voices of impacted individuals, you know, in Milwaukee, out there in our rural areas, that those are the stories that really influence the decision makers in our state capital and at the federal level as well. Front and foremost, one of the things for us as a, you know, as Wisconsin, we are bordered by two of our Great Lakes. And I would be remiss not to bring up the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative and the value that that brings to our state and our region and, frankly, our globe as the largest freshwater resource in the world within the Great Lakes. We really have responsibility to continue to protect those waters for all of our uses, both recreationally, health-wise for drinking water, and economically for the economic engine that they provide. The Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is one of those examples of legislation that we've been successful in advocating for time and time again, both for our state and for our nation, and the time to do so is up again. The bill that authorizes nearly $500 million to send to the Great Lakes states is up for reauthorization. And so, you know, being able to connect with your state and federal delegation and helping them understand what the importance is for funding for things like the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative to keep Lake Michigan and Lake Superior clean and providing all of those necessary uses for us is extremely important. So we are really working on informational campaigns to make sure that our supporters and members and those up at the state capitol here in Wisconsin appreciate what these pressures are that we've been talking about for the last hour with you. So, and really helping them contextualize it to understand what this means to an everyday Wisconsinite. And so understanding and hearing those stories from listeners and from others has been extremely important in our successful advocacy that way. And you, as each of you as listeners too, can do your part by, you know, reaching out to your legislators, your state representatives, and letting them know that you care about clean water and that you expect that they will too.
Thank you, Sarah. That's Sarah Walling from Clean Wisconsin, a nonprofit organization here in Madison. Thanks so much for coming in today, Sarah.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we're going to turn back to Eric Olson of the Natural Resources Defense Council to tell us a little bit more before we wrap up here about what you're working on right now, both policy and litigation-wise.
Very actively trying to fight to protect our natural resources, to protect our drinking water supplies, and frankly, to protect public health across the country. So we are in court right now arguing against some of these rollbacks. We are also, fighting up in Capitol Hill to try to persuade people not to do some of these silly things. As folks know, it's a very evenly divided House, especially. There are really only two votes that can flip one way or the other and stop some of the crazy things that are being proposed. So we're working with a lot of our friends on the Hill on both parties, trying to just make sure that we protect our environment, we protect public health, and we just really want to make sure that the voices of people like listeners to your station are listened to. And let me just make a plug. I also used, not only did I used to work at EPA, but I also worked in the Senate for a while. And I will say that you may think that it doesn't make a difference if you pick up the phone and call your member of Congress, or if you show up to a town hall, or if you write a letter. It really does, especially handwritten letters make a big difference. Even emails, phone calls to your members of Congress. People pay attention to that. They know when there's an overwhelming outpouring of opposition to a crazy thing. So please, yes, do support local radio and support independent media. That's super important. Without it, without the free press, honestly, I'd really worry about this country. But also, it's really important for people to be weighing in with their members of Congress about what's happening. And thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it, Douglas.
Thank you, Eric, for joining us and sharing your experience and perspectives. That is Eric Olson, Senior Strategic Director for Health at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Thanks again, Eric.
And you bet. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And we have a few minutes. Stephanie Spehar is with me here in the studio today to talk about how you can support what Eric Olson was just talking about here, the work we do on a public affair and at WRT in general, to help create space for community conversations about issues like safe water that matter to all of us, and particularly drawing attention to the people that are impacted most by water when it is threatened. So we heard about lead poisoning today. We heard about the impacts of PFAS here in Madison from people who know the ins and outs of those issues. And they had space here on the show to really describe both the personal and public health elements of the impacts of contaminated water, but also space to describe what's happening on a policy level at the state and at the federal level that could make that water not so safe or not so clean. And as we heard today, there's certainly a lot going on. And we also, I think, got to hear about ways that you can engage, ways that you can help, whether it's donating here at WORT to help support the spread of information. And you can give us a call, 608-256-2001, extension 1, or ways you can engage with your government or community to impact or push back against repeal of policies that protect safe water. So I think we got a good overview, Stephanie, of what we're trying to do here on the show, and what I hope we do on every show, which is at least, even though we cover difficult topics, give people a sense of how to engage or make a difference, or maybe even have a little bit of hope.
Absolutely. No, I was just going to say, I feel better informed and also more empowered after this hour. And I think if you as a listener feel that way too, donating to support what happens here at WRT is a great thing to do. And I want to make sure to thank a couple new donors we had this hour. Eric, donated. And his message is, thanks for a great show, Douglas Haynes.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Eric, for your generous donation. And we also had an anonymous donation as well, a first-time donor.
Hooray, that's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, so thank you for your generous support, everybody who donated.
And you can still call, even though we are wrapping up the hour, or donate online. The number is 608-256-2001, extension 1. Give a shout out to a public affair if that's why you're calling, or if that's what prompted you this hour. If you liked what you heard, of course, if you liked what you heard today, if you appreciated the show, you can always share it online from the Wart Online Archive or wherever you find your podcasts. I am your host, Douglas Haynes, and I'd like to thank today's engineer, Andrew Thomas, producer, Sarah Gabler, news director, Shali Pittman, and receptionist, Amy Lutzke. We have a fantastic team here at WRT, and I'm so grateful for working with all of them to produce this show. And I'm thankful and grateful for all of you who listen and call in and help support the show. So thank you, listeners, for joining us today on A Public Affair here at WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Stay tuned today for Madison Book Beat. The mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot six above sea level. You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. Stay tuned for BBC Headlines.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. Donald Trump has said the United States will not put up with Volodymyr Zelensky's position on a ceasefire for much longer. The Ukrainian leader said over the weekend that an end to the war with Russia was far off. The US president put out a statement on his Truth social media platform saying this was the worst statement Mr. Zelensky could have made. Here's Nomia Iqbal.
As far as President Trump is concerned, he is doubling down, as we've seen from this post that he's put up on his Truth Social platform. And over the weekend,